Let's hope the weather holds up in Kansas City, because if Steven Matz can make tonight's start with the off day Monday, he can pitch Wednesday in Boston, and then that would give the Blue Jays Ryu and Matz for the two games against the Red Sox. I think that's the most ideal starting pitching scenario. Bullet point number one, you can react to that if you want. Second one, though, I really want you to talk about this. I know the line wasn't pretty, but I think Anthony Kay did enough last night to earn another start. What do you think?
I'll start with two, because the defense behind Anthony Kay wasn't pretty either. Yeah, it was ill-advised, and there were things happening beyond the box score, too. The dive of Lourdes Gurriel Jr., his routes last night, I mean, early in that ball game, and it was just not a very good defensive game when Anthony Kay was in the game, and even after, to be honest with you. So I think Anthony Kay, one, should have got that start, will get another opportunity. I'm not sure, though, that a start necessarily will fall in his lap, only because of the off days that are built around the schedule of the next couple of weeks. There's just not a need to have a fifth starter. They can get by, the way that I'm looking at it, with Robbie Ray, Steven Matz, Hyunjin Ryu, and likely TJ Zoik.
So do you prefer Zoik to Kay?
Yes. Right now I do.
Okay.
I think there's a little bit more start, but you know, they're trying to cover innings with some injuries on the back end of that bullpen too, and I think that's going to factor into who gets some bulk work in two or three inning jumps here, and that's where I think Anthony Kay will still have a role, and it might be a piggyback scenario with one of these guys, maybe even TJ Zoik, depending on what the ask will be. But I really think TJ Zoik has the trust and has done enough for the front office to keep giving him the baseball and be part of this four-man crew moving forward the next couple of weeks. And the stability of the Southpaws, on your first point, Scotty, with the stability of the Southpaws, I think, has given the Blue Jays an opportunity to exhale with the way Steven Matz and Robbie Ray have thrown the baseball, not only in spring training, but even their first kind of go-arounds. We've seen more of Matz. We're going to see more of Robbie Ray, which is a good thing, because he threw the ball pretty well coming off the injury.
That was the Peruvian coffee jump-in right there. So
yeah,
Benny,
I thought you meant me for jumping in there. Oriot, we got to talk about Tanner Roark. I mean, I was joking around with Scotty earlier in the show saying, okay, he kind of struggled out of the gate because he's used to starting the games, and now he's coming to the bullpen. Is there any actual truth to that, or we need to see a better performance out of Roark?
You're going to need to see a lot of better performances out of Tanner Roark. That's the bottom line. This is why he was shifted over to this role. And I'm a firm believer this is why they changed his approach as a starter, shifting him from a traditional windup over to the stretch, just to make this a little bit easier, not knowing the situation that he would have to jump into if he was pressed to enter a ball game out of the bullpen. This was all by design. I think this was something that the Blue Jays didn't trust going way back to the start of spring training. They had to have a contingency plan. They're paying him $12 million this year, and you just don't want to cut him loose if there is something there, even though it's going to be a mop-up role now. To me, I don't factor in, oh, this situation was really awkward for him, because this is a situation that kind of the comfortability on the mound has been pretty comfortable. And the bottom line is his stuff is short. You know, they just have not had life on the fastball. His secondary stuff has been too fat, and it's been a problem since he's been a Blue Jay.
Kevin Biggio leaves the game last night with right hand pain, presumably after he whiffed on that line drive that deflected off of his, I guess, partially his glove, but also partially his bare hand and into foul territory. You tell me, Ben, it was like there was a Bermuda Triangle-like vortex on the left side of the diamond that was affecting only Blue Jays defenders. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., I think you touched on the attempted dive on the fly ball down the line. I thought the pursuit of the Benintendi extra base hit was ugly. He came straight across. He was positioned well, right? I mean, he's playing in and he's playing over toward the line based on what the charts say about Benintendi. But then he runs straight across for the baseball instead of taking a 45-degree angle back and perhaps getting in front of it so it doesn't roll to the wall. he had a weird night in left field, and Cavan, up until the time he came out of the game, struggling at third. I guess this is just part of being a young team, and they're going to try and contend in the AL East while they figure some things out.
They've got to figure it out fast, and there's a lot of pressure building on it. I think we've seen the pressure on those two guys specifically, less because, for me, Cavan was pretty sharp, watching him daily and watching him so far in Dunedin. You know, I get a really close view being kind of field level for the majority of the game these days. I still think Cavan Biggio is going to be fine. I think Cavan Biggio's right hand is barking more than he's letting on. Remember a couple of weeks ago, and not a couple of weeks, well, I guess it's been a couple of weeks now. Here we are on April 15th, 16th. A couple of weeks ago in a spring training game, there was a ball thrown from the outfield. Randall Grichuk threw to third base. Yeah. That ball, with the runner diving in, hit Biggio on the finger, the pinky finger, and it wrenched it off to the side, a way that the finger is not supposed to be bent. And he ended up missing a little bit of time in spring training. So he's been nursing a sore hand, and then the ball clipped the same hand. So I'm just factoring in both of those things, knowing that, you know, it's barking anyway. So that's probably the ultimate reason for the departure, and the fact that the cameras never found Cavan Biggio in the dugout yesterday told me there was something bigger going on here with the hand. And then after the ball game, Shai Davidi unearthed the fact that, you know, the x-rays came back negative. All good signs, but still, I think that the hand is sore for Cavan. And all spring long, and it's kind of been like an untold story for whatever reason, but like even last year, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. does not take crisp routes in left field. His bat is keeping him in the lineup. And you know, the other night against the Yankees, I thought Jonathan Davis, Josh Palacios, and Randall Grichuk were going to be the final three outfielders to finish off that ball game when the Blue Jays were trying to line up the win. But because things got tight, they kept Gurriel in there because he was scheduled to come up if the Blue Jays had to bat in the bottom of the ninth. So there's always a little bit of the roll of the dice for that shaky left field spot. There are defensive concerns still with this ball club, even though they tried to address many of them. There are some, at times, very glaring issues left.
Joel Pamps goes two scoreless innings. Do you think we're going to see him a little bit more now after his outing last night?
I think you're going to see him and Anthony Castro get open auditions as long as they can stay on the roster without getting crunched off. They're the first guys to go. They know it as well. They have DFA'd and they've re-FA'd Joel Pamps a couple of times over the course of the spring. So there is belief somewhere within the baseball operations department that this guy can help, this guy can have some success for the Toronto Blue Jays and the way they make out their bullpen. You just wouldn't reacquire the guys, given the scenarios, if they didn't believe in him. And then Anthony Castro came out and he threw the ball very well in his first go-around with the Blue Jays bullpen. And we got him in short sample sizes in spring training, but they know that there's a live arm there. He just has to throw strikes. But again, you know, you've got an opportunity here with injuries come opportunity. And here are two guys. First and foremost, I think you're going to see get kind of a run out of the bullpen, and hopefully it can hold together.
Whenever there's an ulnar description in a pitcher's injury, I get worried, right? The ulnar collateral ligament is the one that tears, and then the Tommy John ligament replacement surgery is had. There's an ulnar nerve in there. So I don't really know what ulnar neuritis is for Jordan Romano, but that's not great. Merriweather is down. Chatwood is down. The attrition here, Stripling out of the starting rotation, the attrition here is quite serious, Ben. I mean, they've got a challenge on their hands right now.
A very big one. And look at the guys that haven't been available. Those names that you said with the emphasis of where they're supposed to throw in a ball game, go all the way back to losing Kirby Yates. The bicep is an issue for Tyler Chatwood. The oblique is just another concern for Julian Merriweather. And it's a lower oblique on the left side of his body, and that's the landing leg for a power pitcher. That's a problem. Yes, Jordan Romano with the ulnar. Anytime that you worry, I freak out when I hear ulnar.
Well, I worry when I hear forearm strain like we did for Stripling, right? Because that can always be a precursor to the elbow. Hopefully it isn't, but it can be.
Yeah, and that's not, you know, that's a guy that was just kind of forced into this rotation role. The Blue Jays ideally would have had him in the bullpen to begin with. There's a lot of concern. There is a lot of concern. We haven't seen David Phelps yet. He's still listed as day-to-day. So the Blue Jays have a fire drill right now trying to figure out who is going to, one, get big outs in a ball game, let alone who's going to round out this roster that you trust. There are a couple of guys left that I think are in the pecking order, like A.J. Cole, somebody that they rode a lot last year, didn't look so great in spring training. And then you've got Travis Bergen, which is another lefty that has been really throwing the ball well all through spring training and even towards the tail end of last year. And people continue to rave about his success. So there is a little bit more on the depth chart this year versus last year. But unfortunately, you're trying to tap into that depth chart. Now we're talking about the resources on Friday, April 16th.
Yeah, and it's Friday, April 16th, and we're still not talking about Nate Pearson as a guy who factors in at any point
way
soon.
Off.
I know he's throwing.
Way off.
But
yeah,
he's way off, and even when he comes back, I envision him as maybe an opener, give you 2-3 innings. You got to manage the innings as well as anything else with him, right?
Yeah, I mean, Nate's like a whole other chapter of this big book, because it seems like his entire career we have talked about managing Nate Pearson's innings, which is not, in my opinion, it's not fair to the kid. It wasn't fair to him in the minor leagues because he never really had to exert himself and work through a start, figure out what works well, how his body works when it's really exerted, tired, pitching on a travel day. He's never had sort of those boxes check in adversity to figure out how to do things if there is adversity when it really matters in the major leagues. And we didn't see the best Nate Pearson last year. We have yet to see an injury-free Nate Pearson so far this year, and he's way off, you know, from being even an opener, to be honest with you, 1-2 innings. For this guy, because he just got on a mound for the first time, and you know what's that, 20 pitches. So I think they want him to be a starter when they come back, and I just don't know that the clock is going to allow that the way things are going.